Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Do you know who Lynn Conway is? Without her, you wouldn't be able to listen to this podcast, text your mum, or even email your boss. Like Alan Turing, her legacy in computer science, pioneering the microchip, changed the world. So why is she barely known? Well, she also happens to be trans. This Pride Month, cut through the noise and misleading headlines about the trans plus community with the history lesson you never had on the Queer AF podcast.
If you want to change the future, start living as if you're already there.
New episodes every Monday.
You need to be an upstander, not a bystander. And that's one of like our tenets in our household. If something wrong is being done to someone or something, we stand up for it. That's what we're supposed to do.
Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast. I'm your host, Joanne Crone, joined here by my brilliant co-host, the wonderful, brilliant Bree Tucker.
Wow. Hello, hello, everybody. How are you?
I had to like say the brilliant Bree twice because I'm like, you can't take advantage of the alliteration if you don't say the word next to the other word. So I had to do it. Like it had to be that way in my brain.
Personally, it's just my morning pep. It's my thing that makes my day be like, oh my God, someone other than my dog thinks I'm brilliant.
That's what dogs are the best for. Oh my God.
They are.
My dog loves me all the time.
They are. They're like, I love you so much. I can't even let you fall in the toilet. I'm going to sit here and watch you protect you the whole time.
All the time. Well, today we have a fantastic guest. She is a host of a podcast herself. And so this is going to be a great conversation.
We are giddy about this episode. It's going to be amazing.
I also love talking with other podcast hosts because we're all kind of used to being on the mic and we're used to forgetting about the mic kind of. And we've overshare, as we talked about before. We overshare. We say all the things. It doesn't matter. We're just like here talking. And I love that. I love it. So our guest today is Jamie Kelton. She's the founder and host of the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. And co-author of the book, If These Ovaries Could Talk, The Things We've Learned About Building an LGBTQ family. And she is the proud mom to an 11-year-old daughter and a 7-year-old son. And with that, we're going to talk with Jamie. We're going to have a lot of fun. So let's get on with it.
You want mom life to be easier. That's our goal too. Our mission is to raise more self-sufficient and independent kids. And we're going to have fun doing it. We're going to help you delegate and step back. Each episode, we'll tackle strategies for positive discipline, making our kids more responsible, and making our lives better in the process. Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast.
Okay, Jamie, welcome to the podcast. And as I said when I met you this morning, I'm like, I've been stalking you for the entire morning. So I feel like I know you already. And one of the things I was talking to you about is like, you're a voiceover actor as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow. You went deep. You went deep. It's a pleasure to be here. I just want to say that. Thank you for having me. And y'all are really buttoned up doing that intro on the fly. I do my intros after, like later.
It's because we're lazy. We don't want to edit them.
We used to, and I was like, oh, that's so much work. Can we just put it together?
No, good for you, because you got it ready to go. You got it all written down. It's amazing. I don't even write it down. And then my poor editor hates me because I'm like, oh, sorry, Jerson. Wait, take that out. Like in real time, it's terrible.
You'll hear us talk to our editor during this show as well.
Shout out to Michael. We love you, dude.
Shout out to Michael.
Michael, you rock.
We'll take things out all the time. Yeah, but I found like you were a voiceover actor. You voiced Little Bo Peep in a show called Happy.
Yeah.
How did you get into voiceover acting?
Well, I started out way back when, before children, in musical theater. So I was a professional musical theater actress, did a lot of tours and things. And then when I had kids, I didn't want to travel anymore. So I stopped auditioning. And then I just fell into voiceovers. Mm-hmm. A friend of a friend was like, hey, my boyfriend's a voiceover agent. You want to go to that? And I was like, okay. And then I booked the first job he sent me. And then I just kind of fell into that. I don't book every job. Listen, it's far and few between. So I don't want it to seem like I'm like, I happened to book the first job. And then it was like slim pickings for like 2 years. And then I got another one. So...
So you piqued my interest on musical theater actress because, as Bree can attest,
we were just talking about this morning, weren't we?
I do a daily Joe with Joe, which I have my coffee. I'm Joe in our balance community. And I was just talking about musical theater today. I'm a big fan.
Oh.
What shows have you been in?
The last one I did 2 months before my daughter was born. My wife had my daughter, so I was able to do it. It was A Chorus Line. Okay. And before that, I did You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, like 3 times. I did Cinderella. There's been so many. You're in Town.
Oh, I want to see that. I have not seen that.
I have not heard of that.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorites. Oh, it's so fun. It's about a town where they have to pay to pee. It's just hilarious.
I was going to say, did I hear that right? Yeah. Is it urine or is it you're in?
It's urine.
So, all right. I heard it right.
In the town, they have to pay to pee. It's so funny and fun. And I would do it again, even though I don't do it anymore. But I would do it in a heartbeat. I would do any musical in a heartbeat. Are you kidding me?
Okay, I've gone down the Broadway musical.
If we had any lesbians listening, we just lost them.
Stick around. We got more great stuff.
And I am a lesbian, but I think we just lost them.
That musical theater area. So you are the host of the Queer Family Podcast. In my stalking, I saw that you started the podcast before your son was even born. So It's been going on like 7 years now.
Yeah.
And why did you start the podcast? What was your reason behind that?
So it's kind of a long story. So buckle up. I'm going to try to make it real short. I'm going to do my best. So my wife had our first because she was a little bit older and we needed to get started. This is in a nutshell. We need to get started right away. So she had our first and we just figured because I was young, I'm 7 years younger. We just figured when it was my turn to have a kid, it would be bada bing, bada bing so quick because I was young and active, whatever. Thought it was going to be easy. It wasn't easy. It took me almost 3 years to get pregnant. So I had unexplained infertility. And this is, you know, when we go to make babies, we start at the fertility clinic, many of us, not all of us. So this was all medically assisted in my case. And even that took almost 3 years with IVF after IVF and IUIs and so much donor sperm. I don't even want to talk about it.
That is kind of a scary thought. I would have never thought of that before until you just brought it up. But yeah.
We had to bring our sperm donor out of retirement. That's how much sperm we went through. I'm sorry, all the non-queers listening.
That's so funny.
I love hearing all of this. This is so interesting to me. It's not something that gets talked about.
It's a comical view of a struggle is what that is right there. It's a comical view of a struggle being like, I had to bring him out of retirement. Man.
We did. We brought him out of retirement. Thankfully, he came out for us. That was really nice of him. This is the kind of things that I talk about on my show because, like you just said, it's not talked about enough. And we need to hear these stories, especially in the L'Egyptquois community, which I like to call us, you know, because it's cathartic and it's helpful and there's no guidebook, although there are some coming out now. Anyway, I digress. So I suffered from infertility. And as you do when you're going through infertility, I started to get sad and I started to get lonely, not to turn this into a sob story because I was never that deep into it. I was needing to hear my story mirrored back to me. I was needing to hear from other people who had similar stories. And I had just discovered podcasts, you know, this was 7 years ago. So I was like, oh, there's a podcast about everything. I'm sure there's a podcast about this. And I found a lot of fertility podcasts, infertility podcasts, baby making podcasts, but they were all heteronormative lenses, all straight stories. And, you know, the husband would come in and be like, I didn't want to go to the fertility clinic. And like, it didn't resonate with me, you know, and then they would always turn it to Jesus. And that doesn't resonate with me. No offense if it resonates with anybody else, but it doesn't resonate with me. So I wasn't finding, I needed to heal from hearing my story and I couldn't find it. So I kept saying to myself, somebody needs to create this. Like somebody needs to create a family podcast through a queer lens. And then I realized, that's me. I have to create it. So
I love that. Oh, wait a minute. No one else going to do it? I love that you have the gumption to be like, If no one else is going to do it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Well, the idea just wouldn't go away. It was like, you know, they talk about the seed,
yeah.
You know. So I created it when I was 6 months pregnant. So I didn't actually need it anymore. But now it's not just about like getting pregnant. It's about all the things that go with queer family.
It's the community.
Everything. Yeah.
It's making the community accessible to people that don't have it accessible for whatever reason. It might just be that logistically it's not accessible, or it, like you just said, I understand what you mean. Like I've gone through a couple of transitions in my life where I like looked around and I love my people. I love my tribe. Joanne is one of my best, dearest, closest friends. But you still need people that have gone through the struggles that you're going through, most importantly, while you're going through them. Because like you said, when it's something big like that, it can make you feel so isolated.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And my mission with this show is to highlight, celebrate, uplift, and normalize LGBTQIA families in all of our fabulous identities. And we have a lot of identities, I know. I know it gets tiresome, but, you know, we got a big acronym that keeps growing.
But I need some voice. I need some pronunciation help. Okay, say that for me again.
Because it's LGBTQIA, right? So LGBTQIA.
I like that. I want to start using that. That's why I want to pronounce it LGBTQIA. Because something that you said is normalize it. Because something you said that I found was that the mainstream media is not the truth of the world around us, and it needs to change.
Yeah.
And I see that a lot in, of course, the news in our current political environment, which I do want to get into with you because I know you're very, very active against that. And also, I haven't seen very many queer families start either. The only one that I could really reference is Jess King of Peloton. She really shared openly mm-hmm. about starting her family with her wife.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing more representations of this, having more people become accustomed to seeing this, I think just makes the world a better, more understanding place. So we're going to get into exactly how we counter that kind of pushback against normalizing it right after this. So you mentioned, Jamie, about starting the Queer Family Podcast to kind of normalize this representation of families and what families look like and what love looks like. And on your Instagram, which I will totally admit to stalking you all day long on this because I found it fascinating, especially the school board discussion that you posted.
Yeah.
So for those of people who haven't seen it, and for Brie, tell us what happened at that school board meeting that you posted.
Okay. So first, I just want to say, because you said something before the break about, you know, how there isn't enough representation, and there isn't across the board, but you can find it on social media. It's all over social media. So all you have to do is search out the accounts. And that's one way to be an ally, is to follow and support queer accounts like mine. And like my Instagram feed, it's just all queer stuff, you know. And then I have my private one, which is like inspirational quotes and shit, you know, just to get me through the day. But like, you know.
And then so you dance. And I really appreciate your dancing. You're an amazing dancer.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I got to throw some dancing in. Some, you know, you're supposed to use all your talents. That's what they say. So I got to throw it in somehow. Okay. So the school board thing. All right. I live in New York City. My kids go to school in Chelsea, which is the heart of the modern day LGBTQIA civil rights movement, right? And our district houses not only Chelsea, but Greenwich Village, which is also a huge part of the LGBTQIA civil rights movement, and Hell's Kitchen, which is same. And actually, over a year ago, our CEC board of District 2, which is a huge district.
And what does CEC stand for?
CEC is Community Education Council. So it is elected parents from District 2.
Okay.
Everybody has a CEC, everybody. Every school has a CEC board or whatever they call it. Nobody pays attention because you just assume that the parents are representing the community and they don't actually have any real power. They can't make decisions. All they can do is recommend. That the DOE change this or do that, right? So they don't have real power. But what they say has power, and the words they use has power, and the propositions they put forward have extreme power and say a lot. And so recently, or over a year ago, they brought a new resolution up and voted on it that would ask the NYC DOE to rethink their inclusive sports policies. So basically, they don't want trans girls playing sports.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
They worded it with, we just want to start a conversation about trans children in sports. No, the conversation's done. They made the decision. We're inclusive. Everybody deserves a right to all the things that everybody has a right to, right? So anyway, so the DOE, more than half, voted yes to open up the conversation and ask the DOE to do this. And then the DOE promptly shot that down and were like, hell no, that's not happening. So then the next month, those on the board who are more equity-minded brought up a resolution saying, please rescind resolution, whatever it was, 278. We would like you to rescind it. Take it off the record. It is harmful to the trans community. It is harmful to trans children. You are saying they are less than, and it is harmful to the LGBTQIA community, blah, blah, blah. They refuse to rescind it. Every month since then, that part of the CEC board has brought a new resolution to rescind it up. And every single month, they shoot it down. The trans community has gotten word of this. They show up every month now. It's a huge protest. It's a whole thing. They bring cupcakes. Like, it's a whole, there's people knitting in the audience. Like, it's a little crazy.
Oh my God. That sounds so much fun.
Queer and knitting just go hand in hand. I don't know what it is.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And my wife and I have been attending the CEC meetings since before this, because there are things that we caught wind that there are things that this CEC board was voting on that we don't agree with, that is low-key segregation and veiled language and all kinds of stuff, which was alarming to us. So we had started to attend the meetings even before this happened. And then when this happened, more and more people caught wind of it. And now celebrities show up. Che from And Just Like That.
Oh, really?
Has been there. Alana Glazer.
Sarah Martinez. Yeah. I remember them from Grey's Anatomy.
I never watched that.
But, okay. I was like, oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah.
I stood next to Alana Glazer at one of the meetings, and she was like, hey, I'm so pissed off. I was like, yeah, me too, Alana. Nice to meet you. Yeah. I was like, yeah, Alana, you're Alana. I know who you are. But yeah, and a lot of names have shown up and in protest of this, and they just keep voting the wrong. It's
Do they say
disgusting.
Why they won't remove it?
Their whole argument was, we just want to start a conversation. It's just, what's harmful about a conversation? That's what they're standing on.
Yeah. So that's an interesting question, though, because I know that that is the rhetoric that a lot of people stand against. We just want a conversation. And like, have you seen anything that's a good counter to that argument? We just want a conversation.
The conversation's been had. Like, do you want to open up a conversation to if concentration camps are a good idea? Absolutely not. The conversation's been had. This is done.
Right.
Do you want to start up a conversation about segregating schools? No, you don't. It's done. Something that is harmful to other human beings is not okay, at least not in my world.
No, you're totally right. You're totally right.
Sorry, I just got loud there.
But no, I love that. Please bring the fire, Jamie.
I get very heated. And now I've lost parent friends at my kids' school because I've been so vocal. One of the guys who keeps voting the wrong way on the board is actually in our school, on our PTA. And he has a lot of the parents in our school just in the palm of his hand. And they believe everything he says, even though he lies. Like, it's crazy.
It's rough. And it's hard. Like, it's rough when you have that personal connection. So, like, my nephew is trans.
Mine too.
Okay. Yeah. So I grew up in the Midwest. We were talking before, and like our audience knows, I grew up in Missouri, went to college in rural Missouri. I was in a sorority, way to go, Alpha Gamma Deltas. I love all my sisters. However, on social media, it's come out really strongly in the last few years about there being a lot of my people that I've considered like close friends, sorority sisters, are very against the whole transgenders in general.
Yeah.
And spouting a lot of things where they have a lot of fears that are not based in reality. Mm-hmm. They're fears that they have been told that could happen. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they refuse to be able to acknowledge that just the conversation is dangerous.
Right.
Because it gives people just enough information to give them a fear, but not enough information for them to actually understand the whole concept. So then it goes from whatever it started as, in your case, starting about transgenders not being allowed in sports, goes into the whole bathroom thing. And now it's like every transgendered person is going to attack my child. And it's like, that's why the conversation can be dangerous.
It's fear mongering. And mm-hmm. the government's doing a really good job of putting a lot of fear in our hearts, and not in my heart, in people's hearts. And, you know, they tried to do with the bathroom bans. That was their first attempt before, years ago. They tried with the bathroom bans. It didn't work. This is their new scapegoat. This is their new way to get at first the trans community and then broaden that to the LGBTQIA, because they still want to, there are so many of them who still want to take away gay marriage, right? Mm-hmm. So this is just their way in to then start fear-mongering about the rest. It doesn't stop there.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
You bring up the bathroom bans. It's so interesting. Like, I traveled to New York. I go there a lot. And I want to point out something that I saw last time I was there, and we'll do it right after this.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
So I was talking about the bathroom bans. And being here in Arizona, we are going to a purple state, proudly.
But we're hopeful.
It has some red roots in here that are still a little hard to get past. A lot of our listeners come from the Midwest, and they don't have as much exposure to the various variety of things that, for instance, New York City citizens have. When I go to New York, it is not uncommon to see a bathroom that says all genders accepted in this bathroom. And that's a rarity for me to see coming from Arizona, because we don't have that here at all. Yeah. I mean, Bree, I don't think we can even say like we see like all genders accepted here, any place here in Arizona, in the Phoenix area.
But it's a couple of places, but you have to go to like a...
I think it's also like in New York...
friendly.
Just to defend where you live. Like, I think in New York's case, in a lot of cases, it's just because it's a space issue. Like, they can't put multiple bathrooms.
I was going to say that. I'm like, honestly, why are we even having a fight about this conversation? An all-gender bathroom is actually a great space saver.
Also very realistic for the whole women taking on the mental load of childhood, because you have an all-gender bathroom.
Right.
Men have access now to a baby changing station. Bam.
Yeah,
problem solved.
Yeah, I don't have that problem, ladies. I'm sorry. They don't have
no. I know.
We share everything 50-50.
So mad. I would get so mad, Jamie. You have no idea. I would be like, you could take this baby out to the car, Joshua, and you could go change him there.
Oh my God. Oh, my God. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry for your loss, ladies. It's so much better over here.
I see a lot, and I'm like, oh, it would be a lot. My husband is very progressive, so I do not run into the same issues that I hear a lot of our no-go mom community run into. He's the one who we're talking about mental load. He's talking about his mental load, my mental load, figuring out, you know, all of those things. But I could see how actually coming to a relationship with the perspective already of being a woman could make a lot of things a lot easier.
Right.
Or, you know, having a growing up of being raised a woman in society, making it easier.
Yeah.
So as a parent, 11-year-old, 7-year-old, you are teaching them how to be visible, be accepting, but there's all of this hate and backlash around it. Like, how do you deal with that as a parent?
You know, I guess we have a lot of books. I'm loud. They know what our political views are. We talk about it openly all the time. So they hear these conversations all the time, so that they hear. My 7-year-old, I don't know, we're not giving him too much information, but he hears it constantly. And my daughter is a little more aware of what's happening, and she actually knows the people at the school. And so it's a little more personal for her, and she understands it. But I tell them all the time, you need to be an upstander, not a bystander, right? Mm. And that's one of like our tenets in our household. Like, no, we're upstanders in this house. We're not bystanders. If something wrong is being done to someone or something, we stand up for it. That's what we're supposed to do. And that's how I'm raising my kids. I can't say I do much more except be really visible with my upstanding, my standing up for things and vocal about it, and hope that it's getting oozed into them in some way. But my daughter has done some pretty cool things as a kid, just standing up for what she believes in. So that makes me proud. So I feel like it's working a little. We have books, you know, pride books, books about same-sex families. We have a bunch of them. And I think those help my kids understand empathy. And just being queer makes you an upstander. You have to. You see what it feels like to be the one who's being pushed down. and it doesn't feel good. So then you go out into the world, and when you see it happening to other people, no matter who they are, you're more inclined to stand up for them.
Yeah, it's about being accepting and feeling like everybody deserves to have the same basic rights. It's not that hard of a concept.
Not being quiet either, because you have to think about all of these issues right now, how many people disagree with them, how much of a ruckus that we could create if we were all noisy about them and we stood up for them and we said what's on our mind.
Yeah. I think to be a true ally in every respect, I'm not just saying like an ally to the LGBTQ community, but allies to immigrants whose rights are getting taken away, allies to whoever, right? Across the board, I think to be a true ally, you have to speak up. Especially right now, if you're silent, your silence isn't helping. Your silence isn't helping anything. Silence is not the answer right now. Right now, we need to stand up and speak up for all of the marginalized, because they're coming after all of the marginalized.
Well, and I would even say, reflecting back to the earlier conversation we were having with your school board, and there being the point of what's wrong with having a conversation. And I think that I also bring this back to a really great interview we had recently with Elena Joy on the podcast. I feel like a one-on-one conversation is fine, because it's all about, Elena talked about like the lived experience, right? And it helps you understand where people are coming from with their mindset, where their opinions are, and then you can help share yours. But that's a conversation. When something is this emotional, it is hard to have a productive conversation in a large group setting.
Also, you need to have a conversation with people who have the lived experience. You know, you can't put this on a school board that has no single trans individual in it. How are you going to have a conversation? What are you talking about, right? So have conversations with the people who have lived experience, and then also realize that it's really taxing on them, right? So sometimes you got to go do your own freaking research and go look at things written by trans individuals or whoever the group we're talking about is, right?
Yeah.
You can do research. The internet is full of wonder for resources. So if you want to find facts about transgender girls in sports, it's really easy to find it. And you can even filter it and be like, only give me statistics that were created by folks in the trans community. And you can find that, right? But you need to go and hear from actual trans individuals if you want to start a conversation. Like, start with them, right?
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just like so backwards. And like, all the people who are pushing back against these trans girls playing sports in the name of protecting girls, first of all, it's ridiculous. But have they ever met a trans little girl? I don't think so.
No, they have. I mean, like, I've had conversations with people who are against like trans people in bathrooms. And I'm like, have you ever met it?
Yeah, and maybe you have, and you just didn't know it.
Exactly.
Bam. That's a big one right there.
And this whole thing is based on the assumption that trans girls are boys. They are not. They are girls.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely.
So get that right. There's so much that people can learn.
There is so much people can learn. And I think like that's part of the very frustrating thing about this entire situation, because it's like people in power have closed their minds off to any new information. And now they're going to go make laws to reject everyone who is not like them and they don't understand.
Mm-hmm. I do feel like in our current political climate here in the United States, that there is a lot of people that are in the power to make decisions and to make these laws and to make new resolutions, that their lived experience is secondhand stories that are secondhand stories on top of that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they're not, like they never have sat down and actually had a conversation like you just said. It might be like, oh, well, I knew somebody who had this experience and this is why it's bad.
A volleyball spiked her in the head and she got a concussion because a trans girl hit the ball, right? That's the one story everybody says.
Which is ridiculous, because that can happen in any game.
Exactly, that can happen in any game. And this, all of this whole argument that they pose is all based on A, the fact that in their minds, trans girls are actually boys, right? So that's their first wrong.
Yeah.
And that boys and testosterone naturally are going to make your body better at sports, which is also not true. And when you're little and your body is growing at different stages, any person can be better at a sport at any time, at any age, because they are growing, changing bodies. Mm-hmm. And it always comes down to little kids in sports, which is mind-boggling. Yeah. Why are we going after the youth? They should just all play together. Why do we even separate them by gender anyway? I don't even understand that. Yeah. You know, they're little. Their bodies are changing. And when we go on the assumption that testosterone is better, then you get all this crazy fear-mongering and crazy rhetoric that, you know, we got to protect our girls because they can't handle playing sports with someone with testosterone running through their bodies. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, which is just feeding into the whole victim mentality anyway.
Yeah, it's just all based on these crazy ideas. I feel like we're losing your whole audience because I'll keep going.
No, we will. No, we're not. We're not. They like us feisty. They
do. Not at all.
They do. But as we're nearing the end, what could we do about it? What is one thing that, Jamie, you've seen that you want people to do to change this narrative, to change this environment? Like one thing.
Speak up. You know, like I've been to DEIA meetings and talking about just like white supremacy and being an ally to my Black and Brown community. And the one thing that really stuck with me in one of the meetings was even in the tiny little normal conversations, even when it's a thing that your friend said who thought they were in safe company and they could say that one little word to you or that thing that is slightly racist and you let slide because you're both white, right? No, it's our job actually as allies to call it out, as uncomfortable as it is, because if they had said that to somebody who was Black or Brown, that person would feel horrible.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
So it's our job as allies to call those people out who may not even realize what they're saying is not okay.
As a microaggression.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
So I think speaking up and...
And what you mentioned, it's just a really tiny bit of courage that could feel really scary in the
it's
moment.
So scary.
But that is something that you can do. You don't have to go and create a big speech. You don't have to go and like rally the legislature, although all those things are good. The only thing you need to do is when you hear it, speak up about it, start there, and then you might find you can grow and speak more.
Right.
Because I think that's the scariest thing, confronting our friends and acquaintances that we see on a day-to-day basis
totally.
About those little microaggressions.
And support the accounts, not just in their month, not just in February, and not just in June, not just in, you know, AAPI month, whatever the month may be, right? Like all year round, maybe find the organizations that support them or just follow accounts on social media. That's such a simple thing.
Yeah.
Share accounts on social media that are uplifting the community, that are celebrating the community, that are speaking up. Share those things. You know, it doesn't hurt to share stuff. I had a friend during Black Lives Matter when all the stuff was really hitting the fan. And my friend Allison, shout out to Allison, she's Black, and she put a post up and said, all my friends who tell me you're my allies, and I haven't seen a single post from you about this, shame on you. And I was so, I remember being like, oh, please, whatever. You know, I'm an ally, da, 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 da. And then I realized, no. Yes, shame on me. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise it's in a void. It's silent. And there's a whole population of people who are staying silent who actually are on the right side. But we're not speaking up. And so the other side gets to take over. Because they're the ones in power.
That's true. That gives me like a different perspective on it. Because Bree and I were talking before this episode started about how Moms for Liberty, they're so well organized. And it's like the conservative parties.
Oh, and we have Moms for Liberty affiliated people on our board. That's the people who brought this resolution. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah.
Sorry.
They're so well organized. They are so vocal. And all the rest of us are staying silent because we don't want to, quote unquote, offend anyone. Mm-hmm. But it's ridiculous. I mean, it's just ridiculous saying it out loud. I mean, I'm guilty of it for sure. I've hesitated posting stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I am too. I work to be a better ally to those that need allies, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's the only advice I could give is just try. And even if you get like one a month, good job. You're exercising that muscle. And the more you do it, the easier it gets.
Yeah, I'm going to take a challenge and I'm going to post something today, Jamie.
Okay.
Yay.
And then also like as a parent, talk to your kids about different families.
Yeah.
Talk to your kids. Have books in your library that have families that look different than theirs.
Yeah.
And they can hear stuff. Kids are really resilient and they can hear how two moms make a family. Like, it's not that deep. You just go into the science of it. Like, it's not that deep. It's not that crazy for a child to hear about sperm and eggs. My kid can tell you all about how babies are made because we have to talk about it.
Yeah.
So if we have to talk about it, I feel like other parents should talk about it too.
Exactly.
They should. They should.
And I think my kids are smarter for it, you know? So it hasn't harmed them knowing their moms love each other and put a lot of intention behind creating them and creating this family, and that they know that we had to use a donor and his sperm to be put into mommy's and mama's eggs, and then they were formed from that. Like, it doesn't hurt them to know that.
No. Yeah. What, Jamie, do you have exciting coming up in your life right now?
Oh, well, it's Pride Month, so, you know, everybody comes out of the woodwork like, oh, we want to do this with you. We want to do that with you. So one thing I'm really excited about is I was asked to be a part of this study that the Pew Research Center was doing about, God, I'm going to get it wrong. I should have written it down. About living as an LGBTQIA plus person in today's world. Mm-hmm. And so they had interviewed me about it. And then they just released the study. It's a really long study about what the state of the world is for us LGBTQIA folks. And I'm one of the people that's listed as one of the resources. And now they've asked me to speak on their panel that they have coming up on June 26th, I think, in Washington, D.C. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's exciting. So I'm going to be speaking on a panel. Listen, I tell everybody on the show, I am not an expert on anything. And most of the time, I don't know the facts. Like, I can't even tell you the name of the study, right? So I'm
okay. I'm in, but I know I'm in a study.
I think like you're more of an expert that you admit it than most people do not admit it.
I can't tell you, you know, which way is up in any given moment, but I'll be speaking on a panel with a bunch of other experts. I'm doing quote unquote. And then they've asked me to do a couple of like live tapings of the podcast. So that'll be fun, like in a studio with some of the panelists. Exciting. So
Yeah.
So that's going to be really fun. So if you're in DC, check it out. I don't know what it's called, but it's the Pew Research Center.
Yeah, I'm sure you can find it on Google. Pew Research, Washington, DC, June.
Got it. I will look it up and I will have a link in the show notes to some way, shape, or form of it. In addition to your amazing podcast.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Yeah. And everybody go listen to my podcast. It's there. And in Pride, we do what I call the Pride Extravaganza. Yes. You have to sing it. I released double the episodes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We released double the episodes the entire month of June. So instead of just episode on Monday, you get an episode on Monday and on Thursday throughout the entire, I don't know why I do this to myself. I don't have the time for this.
We don't know why we do two episodes a week to ourselves either. We
don't know how you do it. I'm already, like, it's only 1 week in and I'm dying here.
Well, I mean, like, and sometimes because of the joys of life, right? Our episodes will be recorded on Friday and then go live on Tuesday. That is stress, people. That's a lot of stress.
Or like it after is. This interview, Jamie, we're batching three episodes and I'm like, kill me now. Like,
yeah, we're not the best at batching consistently. That's a Brie thing.
That's a lot. That's hard though. That's hard. Yeah. It's hard making this stuff, y'all. Give your podcaster that you love some love.
Check in on your podcaster.
Yes. It's a lot of work.
Doing well all the time.
it's a lot of work.
But. Well, Jamie, thank you so much for joining us. I've learned so much from this conversation and a few items that I have. And of course, the wonderful
LGBTQIA. You just have to see the letters.
LGBTQIA. There it is. Okay, that helps. The visualization.
LGBTQIA. This is what I do. I don't know if other LGBTQIA folks would take offense. They haven't yet, but I don't know. It's just what I do. I saw a TikToker who did it and I was like, oh, I like
fancy.
That.
I like it. I
like it. Sounds French.
Yeah, it's great. We will talk to you later.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so no joke, we stayed on for a good 15 to 20 minutes later with Jamie after we ended this episode.
Yes! Oh my God, I wish that she lived closer than New York. I just feel like she would be our people. She is one of our good friends.
We had so much more to talk about there, yeah. But like this episode, I loved it. LGBTQIA. I'm going to have to really, really practice that.
You guys say it real fast? No.
No, I don't think that's not how she said it. She said it so fancy. It sounded almost French.
It's the quad at the end that gets it.
I'll practice it, guys. Something that we want to encourage you to do is to like broaden your perspective on this. If you don't see a lot of queer families around you or know the experience, go and listen to Jamie's podcast, the Queer Family Podcast. Each week she has a different queer family on and they talk about their experience and you get that firsthand lived experience knowledge that she was talking about in our episode. So
yes,
go and listen to that. And we have so many links for you in our show notes. So check those out. And until next time, remember, the best mom's a happy mom. Take care of you. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks for stopping by.
If you'd like to support the show further, you can share episodes with your loved ones, leave a positive review, or follow us on social media at No Guilt Mom. You could also show your love by visiting our amazing podcast sponsors. We have a link in the show notes.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.